welcome everyone to Couch Potato Diary. It's our third birthday. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for tuning in today. We have a lot to talk about on this show today. We're going to be looking at some devastating news in the NHL, some huge wins in the NHL, some gigantic wins in the NBA, and a few teams who could have good wins this week in the NFL as we approach the draft. It's going to be a very fun one. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. If you have been with me through all 3 years, or if you've been with me for the last 53 seconds, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get to the hockey talk. So, before we get into the action from last night, there was some big news in the NHL today, and that is Thatcher Demko is not going to play tonight for the Vancouver Canucks in Game 2 of their series against the Nashville Predators, and depending on who you listen to, it is unlikely he will play against the Nashville Predators at all in this series. And that is just so unfortunate. From a Vancouver standpoint, which, look, I'm not breaking news to anyone. Oh, wow, the goalie being hurt is devastating. Jock. We're really altering the genre here as we get into year three of Couch Potato Diary. But this, like, it just is such a bummer because this Vancouver team, I think, has great potential. You look at, especially, like, the top three lines they have that they can roll out there can be so dangerous. And you have Quinn Hughes, who has turned into a bona fide star on that blue line, and you have Thatcher Demko, who has been the rock for this team for several years and has now got a opportunity to show that on the biggest stage this sport offers. And it sucks that that goes away after one game. What does it mean for Vancouver? In this series, there is the potential that it means nothing. Casey DeSmith, as far as backup goalies go, is fine. There's not going to be a goalie controversy after this in Vancouver. I think far from it. If he raises his trade value, then they could flip him for a third. I think they would be dancing in the streets of Vancouver. But he is good enough that I think he can keep this Vancouver team in it. A lot of people pointed out he has come in injury relief before in a game where he himself then got injured. He's played well against the Predators. He is, at his peak, fine. And so he needs to be fine, right? Like, there is a world where he is just a tire fire and they're hooped. And there's a world where Seelovs comes in and he's a tire fire and this team is just screwed, right? Like, there's that is obviously in the range of possibilities. One of them is, oh, we're screwed. But he is good enough that I think this team can still get by Nashville. I said in Buy Sell yesterday that I am buying that Vancouver just has a significant talent edge over the Predators. Now, obviously, without Thatcher Demko, that shrinks a touch, but only a touch. I still think, like, the forward groups, it ain't close. The Preds have Nyquist, Forsberg, and about it. I'm obviously being hyperbolic here. Nashville has some quality hockey players, but just I don't think that forward group stacks up to anything Vancouver does, and I don't think anything on the blue line. Like, Roman Josi is excellent, but I'll take Quinn Hughes, and then after that, it kind of stacks up in Vancouver's favor. So I still think the Canucks have the edge in this series, but it does kind of bring down the margin for error a little bit. They don't have as much wiggle room now. They do have to be a little bit more refined, and they need to play more than 12 good seconds to go out and win this game. But this is something that Rick Tocchet has been preparing his team for all season long. Probably not under the guise of, hey, Thatcher Demko may blow out at some point, so we're going to have this structure. But Rick Tocchet, for the flaws that I thought he had coming in, one thing I think he has done an amazing job with is getting this team ready for this type of a situation, getting this team ready for these type of games, playoff type games. When things are going crazy and the arena is going nuts and all of a sudden Casey DeSmith is back in goal and no one really knows why, I'm hoping the players do, but no one really knows why there's that guy back in net and everything's going nuts and the Preds are pressing and all of a sudden you're looking down a 1-1 series tie going to Nashville, you can fall back on your systems. And Rick Tocchet has been preaching that all season long, and this is why. It's not so that they can put on a sterling defensive performance against the Columbus Blue Jackets on a Wednesday night in January. It's so that when shit goes sideways, you know what you can fall back on, right? It's, we talk about with, this is quite the corollary we're drawing here, but it's what we talk about with mental health, right? Like when everything is just spiraling, one of the things that I at least have been taught is make a list. And like, these are the things you want to get done in the day. And maybe a couple of like side quests of like, hey, here's why I think you're awesome. And you just go back to that when everything's spiraling, like, okay, let's just do this and see if we can settle things down. And that is where the Vancouver Canucks are now with their systems and with what they've been doing all season long. This is now the spiral time, and this is where you need to fall back on those. Rick Tocchet has coached his ass off, and he has got his team ready for this situation. So I would still pick the Vancouver Canucks today to win this series over the Nashville Predators. Now, I'm doing this at 4 o'clock Mountain Time. That game is in 4 hours. Maybe I'll be proven wrong by the time that game wraps up. But for right now, I still feel like Vancouver has the edge in this series. If this is going to be an extended layoff, then that's where it becomes a problem. They don't have a snowball's chance in hell of beating Edmonton if Thatcher Demko isn't A, in net, and B, Superman. So they're going to need him. If this team is going to reach the full potential that I think they have, and again, range of outcomes, one of the range of outcomes for the Vancouver Canucks is they win the Stanley Cup. That is how good this team is. Not without Thatcher Demko, though. So that, for right now, you can fix this. You can super glue this problem together. You just need that guy to come back very soon, though. Shifting over to what we saw last night, Austin Matthews has finally had his moment. He has obviously had several moments before, right? But this is the, like, the playoffs are when these moments really matter, when these moments actually get remembered. And you can very much argue that the first round isn't even that. But for him and for this team to get that goal at that time, to break the tie with 7.5 minutes to go in game two, stare an 0-2 right in the face, because I don't know if anyone is believing that the Leafs will get puck luck in overtime and beat Boston. So Toronto facing that type of adversity, getting just shelled in game one and coming out and playing pretty well and bouncing back and having your talent leader come out there and get that goal, it is a huge moment for them. And now it is up to the Leafs what they want to make that moment mean. Is that moment to, I mean, you see the Blue Jays hat on me, is this moment the Robbie Alomar home run against Oakland in 92, where that they have been stumbling in big games throughout their recent history? And now all of a sudden, one of your guys has busted through against the big bad Bruins or Dennis Eckersley, and now you feel like you can do anything. Or is this 2016 Edwin Encarnacion hitting a walk-off home run against Baltimore, where, yeah, it's cool, it's a great moment, but it also eventually led to this team losing in five in the American League Championship Series. So what does this moment mean? Is this one of the galvanizing moments that carries this team to a new level and shapes the future of this franchise? Because if this series doesn't go well, I think there are foundational changes happening in Toronto. So that's all that's on the line when Austin Matthews is scoring that goal to even this series up at one. It is now up to Toronto how they respond with this to see how this moment will be remembered. And one of the players who I think had a big hand in that last night was Ilya Samsonov, who comes out and has such an improved game from what we saw from him in game one, where it was rough. Not everything was his fault, but anything that wasn't, or that was his fault, could have very easily been stopped. And I thought he adjusted so effectively against Boston and didn't let any of that get to him. And I thought he was really, really good in this game. Do I think Toronto beats Boston off of this? I do not still. But that went from 100% to 85, just based off of that. But now what does this moment mean, and how do you turn it into something bigger if you are the Toronto Maple Leafs? I was on Game Over Edmonton last night breaking down the Oilers' win over the LA Kings. So if you want about half an hour of my thoughts on that game, go over to the Game Over Network and check that one out. But just a couple Coles notes here. Connor McDavid's quite good. That top line is insane. And I said last night, adding Henrique to that line really is a nice wrinkle, because you now can't, you can't just clog the front of the net and try to take away the Hyman goals. You're never going to take away McDavid, but try to take away some of that stuff and really lock that down, because if you kind of bog down there, Henrique's got a shot that, to steal the basketball term, he can score from distance. So you have to be wary of him as well. So it just, it spaces things out really well for Edmonton, and I thought they did a good job of taking advantage of some openings. Now, the Kings left everything open. They were puck watching like you wouldn't believe last night, and leaving backdoor passes wide open. And Edmonton recognized this. Hyman has a great offensive sense, took advantage of that, and was able to capitalize. Draisaitl had a really good play in front where they kind of did a bunch formation in front of the goal. He goes to the front of the net. The defense kind of sinks back to him a little bit, and then he pops back out. No one really follows him. The both defenders stay kind of in that slot area, and he is wide open. It's a tough angle, but I bet he's practiced that about a billion times, and he goes top shelf putting that one away. This Edmonton team, I don't think, should have any problem putting away the LA Kings for the rest of this series. Four or five games is what I think this will go. The Kings are just not in this class, and they looked at last night. Like, defensively, they were atrocious. Pierre-Luc Dubois had just an abysmal hockey game, and Drew Doughty got worked a few times. Now, many defensemen gets worked by the Edmonton Oilers, but he looked particularly bad last night, as did most of the Kings. The Oilers basically came in there and took their lunch money. It was not just an incredible night in the NHL. It was a wild night in the NBA. Also last night, let's discuss. So that happened. What a night in the NBA last night. First, you get the Knicks comeback. And look, Nick Nurse brought me championship. You guys, if you're watching on YouTube, you see the guy behind me there. So, like, obviously, forever indebted to the coaching stylings of Nick Nurse. That wasn't a timeout call. He's faking it. Like, do I want to? Do I not? So he has plausible deniability, right? If he's looking like he's maybe calling a timeout, so that if the exact scenario that plays out happens, then he can bitch and moan about it, which he's very good at. And if it doesn't happen and they get the inbound and fine, then I wasn't calling timeout. I was thinking about it, but I wasn't doing it. Also, awful design on the inbound last night. Like, hey, we need to get the ball in to the guy who's going to be double teamed, and we're going to do nothing to try to free him up or anything like that. We're just going to run around like it's a high school game with everyone with their heads cut off and do that. But credit the Knicks for taking advantage, and Dante DiVincenzo with the double bang moment from Mike Breen last night, who is just one of the all-time greats when it comes to calling games. And we got two great examples of calling big moments last night from the association. But this was just spectacular from a Knicks standpoint. And it is, again, it's Tom Thibodeau and the coaching that he did, where it is just, you are playing to the last moment to continue to battle and find your ways to win. He did that. And I know it's all cliche, but now if you're the 76ers, it's like Bill Simmons said this about another game on the weekend, but now it kind of feels like you have to beat the Knicks five times to win this series. And like both of these, from a 76ers standpoint and from a Lakers standpoint later in the night, I genuinely don't know how you recover from it. Now, both teams are heading home, so that helps at least a little bit, but it has to feel like an absolute dagger to get so close to having the entire series be different. And now you have to win four of your next five, or your season's over. That has to be just heartbreaking. I do think you can take more from it if you are a 76ers fan or 76ers player than if you are a Laker, because, like, the Lakers, they don't have an answer. And it looked like they kind of had an answer when they were up by 20, and then they didn't. And this has happened a little bit in reverse at times in the last couple of these, where the game, it'll be close. The Nuggets are like, hey, we should win now. And then they win by like 15. They just spotted them 20 this time. It's like, oh man, we're far behind. We should win. Hey, yeah, okay, let's do it. And that's where they make up the 20. So eventually they go on a ridiculous run and kick the shit out of them. It's just, they went on it later than normal. And Murray with an amazing shot over Anthony Davis. I personally would never have the confidence going up against one of the better defensive players in the league. It's like a foot taller than me to hit a fallaway jumper over him when I have the best player in the world also on my team. But credit Jamal Murray for that. Just an incredible shot. But yeah, from a Lakers standpoint, like, that felt like one you could have maybe stolen, and now you are heading back home and you don't have to win in Denver again. You can win the three games you have at home, and now look at this. We take away the Nuggets home court advantage, which is one of the great advantages in all of sports right now. I think they're screwed. For the 76ers, you can at least take some solace in the fact that you have been able to do a really good job of shutting down Jalen Brunson. Now, the obvious counter to that is you've done a great job of shutting down Jalen Brunson, and you're still down 0-2. So the Knicks only now need two Brunson games to beat you, which is not great, because he is capable of that. But they've done a great job of Brunson so far. 22 and 24 points. I went back and looked it up. The last time Brunson has gone back-to-back games without scoring 20 points was March 10th and 12th. Against Philadelphia. So they have done a great job the last couple of times of limiting Brunson. The problem is, again, they're still losing. So that's concerning, I would suggest, from a Philly standpoint. But at least they have the knowledge that the guy who has been lighting it up so far throughout the regular season is a guy who they have at least somewhat of an answer for as this series goes along. Now, I do think that Brunson is a good enough player that he can counterpunch this and figure it out. And also, the Knicks have shown they are a good enough team that it's not just Brunson and the Blowfish. They have some guys who can step up. DiVincenzo, Hart making big shots in game one. Hartenstein with a phenomenal offensive rebound there. They have guys, and they have built a roster of players who can step up in these big moments. And what a night. Just what an unbelievable night. Across sports, right? Like, I didn't talk about it, but you get the Carolina win, where they're down by one with 2 minutes to go, and they somehow win by two. You get the Leafs on a last-second goal. Not last-second goal, but a big late goal, beating the Boston Bruins. You have Mark Stone pissing off the entire hockey world and getting a goal. You get the two buzzer beaters in this game, and then Magic and Cavs played as well. But what an unbelievable night in sports, and what a week it has been in the sports world, and it's only going to get better on Thursday with the NFL draft. And I think there are five teams who can really change their fortunes at this year's draft, so let's talk about those, shall we? The NFL draft is just a couple of days away. It is the best time of year for so many across the football landscape. Draft time in general, right? Like, baseball's draft kind of sucks, but the rest of them, the football draft, the hockey draft, the basketball draft, the WWE draft, all of those, it's going to be great. It's like, you love them. It is a chance for your team to basically get players for free, and you can kind of get excited about the future of your franchise. Now, I'm a Raider fan, so that hasn't necessarily been the case for 25 years, but you see where I'm getting at. And this year, I do think there are some teams that can dramatically change the course of their franchise. You look at how some teams have done that over the last little bit, right? The Houston Texans, an obvious example last year, with Stroud and with Anderson, and all of a sudden, they are now a significantly better team than they were before. The Seahawks, they had a foundational draft a couple of years ago that set them up for success for years and years and years and years and years to come. By the way, they're an honorable mention for this list this year because it feels like they're a piece away from making a real move here, but that could also be a mistake. But I think this year there are some teams who have a spot and have a roster that is just a pick or two away from really doing something special. So here are the five teams who I think can absolutely change their fortunes coming up this Thursday in Detroit. And it's funny that it's in an NFC North town, because the first team on here is an NFC North team. And in fact, there's two of them. I have the Minnesota Vikings. It feels like they're a quarterback away from something really dynamic here. When you bring in Aaron Jones, this defense, they've lost some, but they've added some. You have Justin Jefferson to go along with Addison, who looked like he can absolutely belong in the NFL. That this team has the pieces to, I'm not going to say, yeah, get a quarterback, Super Bowl, baby, but you can compete for a division crown. You can compete for a playoff spot. And in the NFC, just getting into the tournament can get you a real long ways. And the only thing they're missing is the quarterback. And with all due respect to Sam Darnold. Now, they're at 11. Everyone in the world is assuming they are trading up to take a quarterback. Now, I am not necessarily in the J.J. McCarthy camp. I'm not even a big Daniels guy. Just based off of how small he is and how willing he is to accept that punishment. But they do feel like if they are on McCarthy and if they are right, then this team could do some pretty special things in the next couple of seasons. I think they are that close. The next one are the New York Jets. Now, they did a good job in free agency of addressing the needs that they had, specifically on the offensive line and another pass catcher for Aaron Rodgers to throw to. The problem is they addressed those spots with players who are really injury prone. And so they're in a weird spot at 10 where, like, those, the big three receivers are probably going to be gone. Harrison, Adunze, and Neighbors. Those guys will probably be gone by the time the Jets are picking at 10. But Brock Bowers won't be. And so the thing that the Jets have here is if they guess right, like, you have to assume that one of Smith or Williams is going to miss time. And with that, with the first round pick, I think you have to kind of solidify the depth behind them so that it can keep rolling when one of those players gets hurt. The thing is, you have to guess which one. And you have to guess which one you can fill later. Because the offensive line, this is an amazing offensive line draft, but all those amazing players probably going to be gone by the time you're picking again. This is an amazing wide receiver draft, and there's some great depth there, but the elite guys are going to be gone by the time you're picking. You have Bowers, who could be a real versatile weapon, and there are some good receivers after that, but do they make up for Mike Williams if he's the one that goes down? So they're in a weird spot where they have two positions that they don't need to fill, but probably will greatly appreciate it if they did fill here as the season goes on, and they just have to guess right on which one it is. I do think that for a few of these teams that need a receiver and need an offensive lineman, and there's a couple of them, or the Raiders case, they need a quarterback and they need an offensive lineman. It does seem like, at least with the receivers, if you go O-line first and then receiver in the second round, there's still going to be some guys that you're feeling really, really interested in. But this could be, if they get it right, the Jets have a chance to have a real home run here, because the Dolphins, who are also on this list, spoiler alert, and the Bills, I think have taken steps back so far in the NFL offseason. And while I am the furthest thing from an Aaron Rodgers believer, they got a really talented roster around it. All Aaron Rodgers has to do is not be dog shit. And this team could be really, really good in this division. I said the Dolphins, so we may as well just go with them next. The reason that they can change their fortunes here is they have fallen, I think, pretty far, given how free agency has gone so far. They've lost a lot. And so this needs to be another one of those foundational drafts that we talked about with the Seattle Seahawks earlier, where they kind of need to hit not just the first round. They need to be a team that gets the first round right, and the second round right, and the third round right, and gets a steal on day three, and kind of backfills what they have lost so far. If they are able to do that, if they are able to hit the home run here, then they are back up and running. And honestly, maybe in a better spot than they were before, given the cap situation with rookies compared to that. And also, you're going to need to start hitting on these guys, because Tua is going to get expensive in a minute, and you don't even really know what he is yet. So this is a really important draft for them, but they can still be, I think, one of the top teams in the league if it goes well. Another team that I think needs this one are the LA Chargers. They have lost Keenan Allen and Herbert and Austin Eckler this offseason. So it is Justin Herbert and, I think I said Herbert before. They've lost Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, and Austin Eckler around Justin Herbert. So now it's Herbert and Gus Edwards and Quentin Johnson, who it kind of seemed like wasn't it last year. They are in a desperate spot here, but they also, again, need to fill in that offensive line. And this is another one where if they get it right, this is going to be a team that can be reckoned with, because I do believe in the coach that they have brought in. And I do believe in the quarterback, Justin Herbert, although admittedly that belief is fading a little bit. But if it is Adunze or Neighbors who they get in this first round and they happen to hit on one of the later round offensive linemen, then all of a sudden this team is back to being, I'm not going to say juggernaut because I don't think they've ever been that, but this team is back to being a really, really dangerous ball club in the AFC West. And the last one for me are the Green Bay Packers. They have so much on offense, and I think they got a little bit better with Josh Jacobs at running back this year, but they need help on the defense. And the good thing for them is this is going to be, I think, a very offense-heavy first round, and so they have a chance to still get potential game changers on the defensive side of the ball where they are drafting this year. And if you get a game changer or two on that defense, we're assuming the play calling is going to be improved from a year ago. If you get just all you have to do is get a stud. But if you get a guy who can be a game breaker on defense and a couple of guys who can just fill some spots, then all of a sudden, this is looking like a true contender in the NFC. So very important for the Green Bay Packers here, but a good opportunity for them. Sorry for those watching on the video. A good opportunity for them to maybe change some things here with one good draft. Quick swig of water here for the working man. You can see I spilled. So that's it for the football conversation. And I will just say now, that's it for the sports talk on this show today. Find me, I'm on Game Over Tonight for Game Over Vancouver. Make sure you follow me on social media at Primetime Klein. But the rest of this is going to be about me. This is the third birthday for Couch Potato Diary, and so I thought a good time to just kind of reflect, and I think one of the things that I've been all right at is I'm very honest and upfront with the people who are listening to me, whether it was in my radio days or whether it's now. And I was saying this to my wife a couple of weeks ago. I would always get stressed out around work anniversaries because I would always be worried about the spotlight that would put on me because, like, oh man, this is his 8th anniversary here. Shouldn't he be better by now? Like, shouldn't he know how to do this? Shouldn't he be better at this? And so I would always worry around those. Like, you get a couple congratulatory emails and whatever, sometimes a shopping channel gift card, depending on what radio station you're working at. But I would always get worried around those because it's like, this is going to put a spotlight on maybe how not as... That maybe I'm not as far along and great as people think I am. And so now with this, it's okay, it's been 3 years. Are people going to be like, okay, well, why isn't it better then? And one of those people is me. But I will say, I am really proud and happy of where this show is at right now. I started this after I got laid off from Sportsnet 960. And that was, like, the Couch Potato Diary was actually initially a thought that I had for a segment idea to kind of like what I do with diary entries here. Now I haven't done one in a little bit, but what I do with diary entries here, where like I take notes on every game. And so just go through those notes, and there's going to be some gibberish in there. But go through the finer points. Like, this is what I saw in these games, and just kind of break it down. It's the diary of a couch potato, right? That's where it all kind of stems from. And then as you kind of see the radio world turning and stuff like that, I was like, you know, I would rather not, I'm not going to say like this was an overly valuable thing or whatever, but I would rather not lose the intellectual property of this by creating it as a segment on one thing, and then they own that. So I just kind of kept it to myself, and then once what I believed was the inevitable happened, and I was let go from 960, I was like, okay, well, this is the brand here that I want to create. And kind of just jumped in to all of this, not knowing at all what I was doing. And initially a lot of people followed along, and it was good. It didn't grow the way that I wanted it to, a large part because I wasn't running it not the way that I should have. Looking back on it now, it's obviously the way I should have, but I didn't know what I didn't know at the time, right? And so I wasn't able to capitalize on a few things, which is what it is. But I do think this show took a bit of a hit when I took on a full-time role at Daily Hive. There, which, like, it should, right? Like, I was, that was my full-time job, and this was the fun little side hustle thing. But I found that I was doing shows just to do them. And, like, just to check off a box. And part of that was, like, I had sponsors at that time, right? And so I was kind of doing it just to check a box. And that's never, ever, 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 ever what I wanted any of my stuff to be. But I do feel like I then kind of fell into that pattern where I was just like, let's just get this done just to get it done and try to get some other stuff to work, right? And I think these shows for a while just quite frankly weren't very good. And I think the listener numbers reflected that. I think the whenever I would put stuff up on YouTube, it would reflect that. And one of the things that is a strength of mine, but is also a weakness of mine, is when things are, I'm not gonna say when things are going bad, but when just, when things aren't going the way I want them to, I default to, oh, I can just do more, right? Like that was, when I was working at 660 and 960, it's like, okay, I'm not moving up the way that I want to, so I'm going to do more. I'm going to try to get onto a fantasy football show. I'm going to do a UFC show that is going to turn into a fight show. I'm going to do a baseball show. Going to do just a regular weekend thing. I'm going to do all these things while I'm also working at 960 and working on both of them at the same time. And not to pat myself on the back or anything, but I would have some people be like, you work really, really hard. I'm so impressed by that. Like, I don't think I work hard. I just think I do it a lot. And some people equate the two. I don't necessarily. It's just an inefficiency of mine, I suppose. But I've always been good, I think, at when more needs to be done, I can do more. And so it was, okay, well, the numbers are down. So how do I get numbers back up? Well, I've settled in at this number. If I want to get weekly up to this, guess I have to do more shows. And so finding ways of doing more shows and doing all of those things. And was talking with my wife about it one day, who's been amazing during this whole process. And she said, like, okay, like you're worried about like these YouTube numbers and they're not going up. But like, think of all the times we talk about your show and how many times you go, you know, I didn't love it today. Like, it was all right, but it was just kind of surface level. But it was a show. And like, for these people who are seeing this for the first time, how many of them are going to want to stick around, right? Like, you're trying to get all of these eyeballs, but you're kind of just trying to get them once. And you're not thinking about getting them on down the line. And so that was, it seems so obvious, but that was a bit of the light bulb moment for me here, where I was like, okay, I need to stop worrying about the quantity and start worrying about the quality. And that has, I think, really improved things here. Like, I am so proud of what we have, I keep saying we, it's me. I'm so proud of what I have done here for the last little while here. We've made some changes on the YouTube channel that, we're not, like, Mr. Beast is not shaking in his boots. But I'm certainly, like, things are improving. And it's not improving the way that I want it to, but it's nice to see that I learn something, I implement that change, and more people watch and more people listen. And so that has been, that's been really, really good. So now I think as we enter this third year, the focus is going to absolutely continue to be more on quality. I loved what I was able to do with the UFC shows. And I loved what I was able to do with the stuff leading up to and immediately following WrestleMania. And so that is the type of a bit more in-depth stuff that I want to get back to. And I'm not going, like, there's still going to be a bunch of them. Like, I'm saying, you know what, I'm going to cut back on the quantity. This will be the 31st podcast of the month that I have done here on Couch Potato Diary, and it's the 23rd. So figure that math out for a show that initially started as 3 days a week, a little bit more than that now. And so that is kind of the promise to you, that who, like I said at the beginning, if you've been with me for 3 years or now 34 minutes, I do promise that these shows, like the Smart Sports Talk for Smart Sports fans, that was initially the tagline of the show, this is going to get back to that. It's not just going to be, you know what, these guys wanted it more. So there's that. There's going to be real insightful stuff on all of the sports that you love. And I feel like right now, the show-wise, we are in a pretty good place. As far as I'm concerned, it's not as good. I've been working really hard on these to try to get things going. And I have been very, almost petrified that, like, started to build a little momentum. And again, like, you can see the YouTube numbers. We're not going insane here by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not even catching up to the last place that laid me off. But I do see the numbers going up, and I am worried that if I take even a day, that's going to fall off. And so I have been trying to get out as much of this as I can. And like, I have been sick for about a month, and not like I don't believe I'm actively dying or anything like that, but it's just like I have a cold for longer than I should and a cough for longer than I should. And so I need to figure out that balance a little bit better going forward. Absolutely, I do. And that has always been a challenge for me. I have always, I don't want to say put work first, but I have always put, like, myself last, I guess, with the, like, okay, I'm going to get all of this stuff done, and then if there's time, I'll go to the gym, and I'll hit the punching bag for a little bit, and that'll also act as therapy, and so I'll be able to check two boxes, and that'll be great. And so that's something I do need to work on a little bit going forward. And again, this is all just talking about me, so thank you for putting up with it. But I do need to figure out the self-confidence thing a little bit. And if you listened to me on 960, you knew that I put myself down quite a bit. I do think I've kind of stopped that. Now, I'm not having conversations with anyone. It's just me talking on here. But that stuff has still been a bit of a challenge. And I will admit, my last couple work experiences have really hit me in those ways. Overall, I do think the mental health part of things has improved dramatically over the last couple of years. I lucked out with getting a couple really, really good therapists. I've had three in my time, and all of them have been exactly what I needed at that particular time. My first one, Sebastian, just to, like, hey, you're different, so let's figure out what's going on here and just, like, address things kind of as they're coming in. And with Becca, it was a much broader scale of things and how to address everything. And with Jennifer, it was just kind of organizing all the different thoughts that I have. And everything worked exactly how it was supposed to. And so, like, mentally, it is night and day. I feel like a completely different person from a person who I was 4 or 5 years ago, in the best way possible. But there are still some things that I need to deal with. And the fucking annoying thing about them is that they're all, like, the getting panic attacks and stuff like that, that's obvious. I start shaking. So, you know, that seems like a pretty big red flag waving in the background. Like, hey, something's up here. Something's not right here. But it's the subtle things and the confidence things. And yeah, my last couple of ones have been just absolute gut punches where you kind of get a read on a situation and say, you know what, I think it's time for me to go. And then to not 100% have the thought that you have about a place confirmed, but to steal the line from Billions, I am not unsure that I was right about certain situations. And then the SDPN one just hurt, right? Like, that I never like being caught off guard by things, and so I would always prepare for the worst. And like, Steinberg would joke with me at 960 anytime we'd get any meeting request at all, like, a little worried about that one. He's like, they're probably not going to fire five of us, and we're doing it all at the same time. Like, we're all invited to this meeting. Probably not all getting fired at the same time, man. And he's probably not just going to fire you and have the other four of us watch. So we're probably okay. It's probably just going to be some weird thing that we're going to have to do. And he was right until that there was one where it was a one-on-one, and then you get a text saying, like, hey, you're going to be there, right? And then you know. But the SDPN one just caught me so off guard, and I just I let myself believe in what we were working towards and believed that it was a all-in thing. And then when you look back and you see how not all-in it all was, it just, it hits you, right? And so with the 960 stuff and then with this, having that dip there entirely because I wasn't paying enough attention to it, but still having that dip, still seeing that dip, and then the other work experience and now the SDPN thing, and you start to think like, okay, eventually I have to think it's me, right? And so it, and that is again where I doubled down on, well, I'll just do more. And that's why the team specific shows came out. It's like, well, I'm just going to do more. And because I, heaven forbid, I work on the quality of things, because that would mean acknowledging a problem, and that would mean having to work on things, and that's not necessarily my area of strength, for a number of different reasons. But yeah, that one got me really, really tough. And so that has been a bit of a challenge to build that back up. But I do think I am getting there. And like I said, I am so proud of the shows that I have done over the last little while. Not perfect, absolutely not perfect. And I understand, like, the world didn't need more bearded white dudes talking about sports, but I do think these shows are worth listening to, and I do think these shows can add something to the sports discourse, and I am really excited to see, I don't want to say how far I've come, because it's still not where it was at the beginning, but how close I am to getting back to where things were, and how good the quality of shows actually have been. So thank you for coming to my TED Talk. I kind of needed to get some of that off of the chest a little bit, but look, the show isn't going anywhere. There's probably a good chance that after the playoffs and stuff, when it dips back to 3 days a week, it may not bounce back right to five, because like I said, your boy's wearing out a little bit, but this show is always going to be around in some way, shape, and form, and I just hope you guys are around to be a part of the ride. Thank you guys so much. If you've stuck with me this far, bravo. But yeah, thank you guys. Follow me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at PrimetimeKlein, twitch.tv/PrimetimePK, and you can email the show CouchPotatoDiary@yahoo.com. I'm going to be on Game Over Vancouver tonight. Talk about being all in on the vision of what we're doing. The group that we have 100% is, and I'm so happy that we are doing things again and doing things our way. I am really looking forward to the future of Game Over. So that is coming up tonight. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to all of you tomorrow. With all of that being said, I am taking the day off tomorrow. There's a lot going on, but like I said, I haven't been feeling well for the last little while, and I'm doing 8 hockey games this weekend, and I need to prep for at least 2 of them. So I'm taking an admin day, shall we say, but we'll be back up and running before the draft on Thursday. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to all of you later.
Incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.